and welcome to the Ted Brower Show. This is your host again, Austin Brower. Ted is actually in the air right now, so we're unable to connect to him, obviously, via Skype. So he should be back on the show with me tomorrow for all you guys that are wanting to hear everything and hear him back on the show. He'll be back with us live tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. So that should be pretty exciting. Hope you guys had a good Sunday night. If you watched the show yesterday, or not the show, what the presidential speech, whatever he said, I'm going to go over a few things on that. I know I was interested to see what type of propaganda was going to be pushed during that speech. There were definitely a few things that were pretty interesting to hear, so I'll definitely go over those in a little bit. Other news, though, I wanted to remind everybody that, you know, we discussed this a little bit ago. You know, it's been a few weeks. Now everybody's getting to use the idea that IRS does have a stingray device, and that now a Senator Ron Wyden is asking the IRS head director basically why they need a second one. Apparently IRS is now putting the funds aside, and they're trying to acquire a secondary stingray device. But now they're saying that they promise to start obtaining warrants to use the stingray device, and they assure Americans it will only be used correctly and in a limited fashion. If you don't know what a stingray device is, you need to look it up. It's an interesting module. It's been out for quite some time. It originally was for military usage. But what it does is it mimics a cell phone tower signal so that any cell phones in the area basically get redirected to the stingray device, and they can essentially monitor any cell phone areas in the area. So what it basically does is it taps your cell phone, but it does it completely illegally and without a search warrant and without anybody knowing anything about it. So it's not even like you find out you've been subpoenaed or you got indicted and your phone's tapped. No, these guys can throw this thing in an unmanned aerial aircraft, a drone, a helicopter, a truck, and just park it. And they can listen to every single cell phone in that area, including yours, as much as they want without a search warrant. And IRS has come under quite a bit of scrutiny now of why the Internal Revenue Service needs a stingray device, considering the fact that these things range anywhere from about $16,000 all the way up to about $125,000 for one module. Nobody really knows why IRS needs a secondary one. And they even came into a little bit under scrutiny because now they found that they've used it in four non-IRS investigations, including one federal investigation with the DEA and also three state investigations. So there's definitely a lot of controversy about this device and the legality behind it, and the fact that what it allows them to do is to have unwarranted phone taps on your cell phone. And considering the fact that majority of Americans only have cell phones now, I mean, I'm not even going to lie, I don't have a home phone at our house. You know, Lana and I both have cell phones. I mean, there's really, nobody really has home phones anymore. I know, you know, Ted does and a few other people, but majority of the time, nobody has cell phone or home phones anymore. They're all cell phones. And so this stingray device gives them unlimited access to every single phone call you have without even having to obtain a search warrant. So it's definitely interesting. What's also interesting with IRS, because, of course, you know, they're just an interesting branch of the federal government. They're actually technically not even a part of the federal government. They're a branch of the Federal Reserve Bank. They're the only reason the Federal Reserve Bank has been able to maintain its dictatorial status over our country is because the IRS is basically the pit bull of the Federal Reserve Bank, and that's why they throw people in prison for 5, 6, 7 years for back taxes. And my question always is, when I hear about that, I said, who was the victim? You're saying that the federal government was the victim because this individual didn't pay income tax? How is that? How are they the victim? Technically, we're not even required to pay income tax. If you start reading a lot of the statutes, it's actually quite clear that it is a obligation that we go into willingly when we sign a W-2 form for the first time when you're 18 years of age. So if you've never filed a W-2, if you've never signed that, you've never signed into the obligatory contract that is basically the IRS feudal system that requires you to pay your taxes in on a yearly basis. Just a side note, but now Congress is giving IRS new power because of a decline in gas tax receipts basically has bankrupted the Federal Highway Trust Fund. There we go again. We got another trust fund that the government likes to spend all its money in. Now, of course, Congress would rather squeeze more money from the American people than reduce spending or repeal costly regulations or just return responsibility for highway construction to the states, local government, and private sectors. That's always the aspect that I don't understand, is that the federal government now is not, was never designed to be our big brother to overwatch everything. They were designed to unify the colonies together in the event of some type of invasion or war. That's what it was there for. The state rights always trump federal rights. That was until the tyrant Lincoln came in and forced state rights to commingle with federal rights. It's to the point where, you know, tens of thousands of people died in the Civil War over that entire conflict. So a lot of people don't understand that. It's the state rights trump federal rights. They always have, and they should always do so. Most people don't understand that, and now that the federal government has gotten too big for its britches, so to speak, they now try and force anything they feel necessary on the American public, even if the states don't agree with it. And that's where the right here is. You know, the highway construction used to be all based on the state governments. They would, you know, if you have enough money, you can fix this, if that. If you need more, then you tax that state. If you don't want to live in that state with that tax, move to another state. But now they can't do that. So because this provision does not provide taxpayers an opportunity to challenge a finding that they owe back taxes in federal court, now their passport can be revoked. Anyone that IRS claims owes more than $50,000 in back taxes can have their passport completely revoked. And since we know IRS employees, you know, they're it's not, you know, impossible for them to make mistakes. It's inevitable that many Americans will lose their right to travel because of just simple bureaucratic mistakes with this. And not to mention, though, when's the last time I saw anywhere in the United States Constitution that your right to travel free and unmolested could be impeded by the federal government? Not even the federal government, the Internal Revenue Service, the branch of the Federal Reserve. When's the last time you saw in the Constitution they were given the right to revoke your passport, meaning you cannot leave the country at all unless you want to go jump in a boat down in South Florida and try and sail across down to South America? You still will not have a passport, and you will probably have a very difficult time getting back into the country if you choose to do so. So when in the Constitution have you ever seen it's okay for the IRS to revoke that right? The argument assumes that the federal government must collect the maximum amount of taxes because the people cannot do so without big government. That's what nobody understands. The support that people give the IRS is because they think those who underpay their taxes somehow raise everyone else's taxes, which is complete and total erroneous. Now, of course, the truth is that the people would be better off without a welfare warfare state. That's what it comes down to, guys. Simple as that. And nobody wants to talk about it, but the welfare warfare state that we are involved in now, that we call the United States of America, is the reason why we're paying now 40-plus percent of our income in high tax brackets when you add in the Social Security and Medicaid. That's why we're paying so much money, is because the country refuses to stop spending money over and over and over and over again. Freeing the people from taxation, including the regression and hidden inflation taxes, is just one of the many ways people will benefit from restoring constitutionally limited government. That's what it comes down to, guys. The absolutely erroneous spending that just nonstop, it has to stop. It really does. It has to stop. And in other world news now, this is just a completely side topic. I figured I'd let you guys have this one too. Beijing now has issued its first pollution red alert as the smog engulfs the capital. Alert will prompt schools and factories to close and force millions of vehicles off the road after smog reaches 40 times the safe level in some areas considered safe by the World Health Organization. Repeat that again. The smog area rose to 40 times of what those considered safe by the World Health Organization. The alert will begin at 7 a.m. on Tuesday, which was today, which means it already started because they're forward on the time with us. And what's crazy is the Chinese authorities faced fierce criticism last week when they failed to issue it as Beijing residents choked on smog levels. Now it's basically, it's been a code red smog alert. I've never been to China. Dad and Mom have been over there. I think they've been over there once. And they told me the same thing. If you look at the photos of, you know, put in China smog, Beijing smog, it's insane. You can't see 100 yards in front of you. It's so polluted. And, I mean, the fact that China will not get on board with catalytic converters, pollution control devices, just simply scrubbers on their stacks for the industrial coal over there. I mean, the fact that they won't do any of this, and this is what's happening. Now they have to shut all this stuff down. 40 times considered safe by the World Health Organization. That's insane to me. The fact that people are actually living in that is quite sad. I mean, that's egregious. That's really toxic. Back to the show last night. You know, I was on from 7 to 8, so I didn't get to listen to King Obama's speech that he did before the show. It was after the show. So I listened to it last night and today and took some notes down and looked at some really interesting stuff. Now, you understand that his whole speech last night was just full of holes, disinformation, misdirection, and outright lies. And what's even interesting is he essentially, indirectly, what he said, Lois, last night, is that he is sending a message to terrorists that he's not going to stop them with doing anything, and he's going to do his best to disarm Americans. What's crazy is the statement that he goes, Congress should act to make no sure no one on a no-fly list is able to buy a gun. What could possibly be the argument for allowing a terrorist suspect to buy a semi-automatic weapon? This is a matter of national security. Here's the whole aspect of why that doesn't even make sense. The San Bernardino killers were not on a no-fly list. The Fort Hood shooters, not on a no-fly list. The Chattanooga shooter, the Boston Marathon, the Sandy Hook shooting, the Colorado, Aurora, Colorado. None of these guys were on a no-fly list, if you actually even believe that those are the individuals that perpetrated that, just, I mean, that committed this horrible act. If you actually believe those are the individuals that did it, but still, if you do, then you take that argument to the no-fly list. None of those individuals were on a no-fly list. So you're saying some of the highest profile terrorist attacks were not on a no-fly list. So how could putting the people that are on a no-fly list on a Second Amendment ban, basically not allowing them to purchase or own any type of weapons, how would that have anything to do with preventing a single terrorist attack that we've seen? Now understand, according to the reports, there's roughly around 700,000 people on the no-fly list. That's actually the reported number. It's probably higher than that. Many of which are that basically have the same name as somebody else, is a lot of times how it happens. But if you look at the numbers on it, 280,000 people on the list are in a group called not recognized terrorist group affiliation. No recognized terrorist group. Have no idea what it is. 92,000 are in other recognized terrorist group. And then you have like Al-Qaeda, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, all this stuff. My question is, why are these people even on a no-fly list? Why don't they have a search warrant issued to go pick them up and interrogate them and ask them why they're involved in this supposed suspicious terrorist activity? Why is there even a no-fly list? If the whole point is keeping them from flying and now keeping them from owning guns, why the heck don't we just pick them up with a warrant and interrogate them? Obviously, they're involved in something to get landed on the no-fly list, right? That's what you would think. But then the question, it begs the question, why are there 72 Department of Homeland Security employees on the terrorist watch list? That's according to freebeacon.com. You can look it up. That in and of itself should be a major red flag. Either A, it means Obama has filled Homeland Security with those suspected of being terrorists or that have terrorist affiliations, or the list is full of people that don't belong there. Hence, barring people that do not belong on the list from obtaining a weapon to defend themselves would be violating innocent American Second Amendment rights. Right there. The argument is completely null and void. 72 Homeland Security agents are on the terrorist list. So that doesn't even make any sense now. What Obama is blatantly trying to do is arrange a list of people to not only bar from buying weapons, but to confiscate the weapons they already have. That's clearly what this is. This has nothing to do, because we still don't even know what can land you on the no-fly list. It would be the next step in a long-term plan of disarming those that they don't agree with, any type of individuals that they basically say are, you know, anti-government, anti-abortion, Second Amendment rights, store food, store ammo. All the stuff that Homeland Security says can make you a terrorist, that's what they're going to start doing, guys. They're going to start putting everybody on this no-fly list. Every person that's prepared or capable of defending themselves or their families, friends, community, anything against a tyrannical government, a potential terrorist would then be added to the list, because that's what they're going to start doing with this. Now, another one on here that was funny, he said, I've ordered the Department of State and Homeland Security to review the visa waiver program under which the female terrorist in San Bernardino originally came to this country. Now, they said later that the White House, if you saw this, they issued a correction claiming that Obama misspoke, as the female killer did not enter the U.S. under the waiver program, but rather the K-1 fiancé visa program, which requires vetting from FBI and DHS, both of which she made through. So they tried to throw a little twist in there, say, oh, he misspoke on that. She came in the K-1 fiancé visa program, not the original one that we discussed on there, the visa waiver program. They tried to twist it, but they told you the exact same thing. Both of them had FBI and Homeland Security vetting that requires to get through them. She got through both of them. Her husband flew over there and picked her up and came back. He got through both of them. None of these individuals are on a no-fly list. Authorities said that when she returned to the U.S. in July 2014, he brought Malik with him on a fiancé visa. After a background check by the FBI and the DHS, she was granted a conditional green card last summer. There you go, another hole in the story, this whole little speech he did. Next comment, he said, we will continue to provide training and equipment to tens of thousands of Iraqi and Syrian forces fighting ISIL on the ground so we can take away their safe haven. That I started laughing. I had to pause the video because I was watching a replay, but I had to pause it because I started hysterically laughing when I heard that part, because we already know for a fact that those Syrian fighting forces that Obama is providing equipment and training to are the same forces that turned over U.S. equipment to al-Qaeda and al-Nusra and all these guys now. Basically, the U.S. Department has funded these terrorist groups over there. Those same Syrian fighting forces, a.k.a. rebels, have openly accepted thanks for handling over weapons and equipment supplied by Barack Obama. Those same Syrian forces have been joining ISIS. So when you start looking at this, that whole comment was just so asinine and just showed the complete and total lack of just competence that he has as a president. But again, like I said before, we all know he's just a little sock puppet doing what he's told. Another statement that he made is, we also need to make it harder for people to buy powerful assault weapons. There's that word again. I discussed it earlier, assault weapons. They like to use the word assault weapons because it sounds like big, bad boogeyman. Assault weapon. Understand, anything that's used to commit a violent crime or harm on a person can be classified as an assault weapon. That is the stupidest term in the world to use as a machine gun or a semi-automatic AR-15, an assault weapon. A baseball bat's an assault weapon if I hit you upside the head with it. A chain is an assault weapon if I hit you upside the head with it. They're all considered assault weapons. They like to use these terms all the time, like the weapons of war. These stated on here, as reported by multiple sources, California already bars assault weapons. They block the large sale capacity magazines, and they require universal background checks for all gun purchases, including a mandatory waiting period. So right there, California already has all their bases covered. You can't buy the assault weapons that they bought, the assault weapons, or the AK-47s or AR-15s. You can't own large capacity magazines, which these guys had, and you can't get through a background check if you're a terrorist or on the no-fly list. And they got through all that, and they weren't even on the no-fly list. So none of this stuff even has any type of remote chance of stopping these guys from preventing this. The only thing that would have stopped this crime from happening in that building is an armed citizen with a concealed handgun that knew how to use it. That is the only thing that would prevent it. All these people from losing their lives for absolutely no reason at all, except these guys wanted to perform their little Islam Sharia law butcher fest. That is it. One person, concealed carry handgun, could have discharged his weapon in an accurate fashion and taken both of these individuals out, period. Would it have been easy because they were carrying two large-capacity long rifles? Absolutely not. It'd been probably a very difficult shot, and he probably would have been shot in the process as soon as he discharged his firearm. But you have to understand, these guys do not like confrontational forces. They go to places they know people are disarmed. That's why they went to a Christmas party. How many people go to a Christmas party with a handgun besides me? I don't know a whole lot. They knew that. One person in there discharging a firearm would have changed the entire dynamics of that situation. Nobody likes to shoot people when you're getting shot at. It's not fun. Ask the Iraq and Afghanistan vets. It's not cool getting shot at, even if you're returning fire. It still sucks. Nobody wants to engage somebody that's going to actively return fire. The only thing that would prevent this from happening is a person in that building with a concealed carried handgun or AR-15 pistol, if you conceal one of those under a jacket. A little bulky, though, for a Christmas party, but some people can get away with it. The thing about it is, bottom line is, Barack Obama had two goals he wanted to accomplish in his Oval Office speech. The first one was the implementation of his next phase and his plan to essentially go after the red listers, the guys that they don't agree with. They know they're a very, very, very strong resistance to the United States government. That's what it was. He's slowly, incrementally trying to do this now. Understand that. His second goal was shown by the following quote from his speech, was to protect the Islam extremists already in America. He stated, "It's our responsibility to reject religious tests on what we admit into this country. It's our responsibility to reject proposals that Muslim Americans should somehow be treated differently." Okay, so we're not supposed to be bigots. Got that. When somebody comes in your workplace or your party place where you're having a Christmas party, and they decide they're going to come in with an AK-47 or an AR-15 and shoot the place up, and they're screaming Al-Kabar, Ashi, whatever they want to yell, am I not supposed to think it's rather odd that an Islam is shooting at me? I'm just supposed to go, oh, it's not because they're Islamic. They're not doing this because they're Islamic. They're doing it because they're mad about an argument at a party. No, absolutely not. It's the stupidest thing. You can even see the 3,000, the vast majority of the 3,000 mosques in America, they've shown now 75% of them are part of some type of jihadi network, according to a former FBI counterterrorism agent. You can pull it up on Breitbart. 75% of the 3,000 in the United States. That right there should be enough alone to show you that this is a very, very violent law. Are all of them involved in this type of behavior? Absolutely not. Are a lot of them involved in it? You better believe it. And what's even crazier is that, you know, anybody that tells me that I don't have a right to carry a firearm or to buy any firearm I want or to possess any firearm I want is a flat-out lunatic, because they obviously have never been in a situation like this that calls for a concealed carry handgun. The mainstream media now even admits gun control doesn't work. During an interview with Hillary Clinton, ABC's George Stephanopoulos apparently agreed with a statement. Remember, this is ABC now, with a statement by Senator Marco Rubio pointing that the strict gun laws didn't prevent recent terror attacks. And he went on to say, California has some of the strictest gun laws here. It didn't stop those attacks, so what law would have stopped this? Because they already have an incredibly strict gun law. This is great. I love Hillary's response. She's such a blithering idiot. I don't know what we're going to do if they try and put her into office by some little executive order or by getting rid of the competition. She states here, continuing to refuse prohibited people on the no-fly list from getting guns. We also need to have comprehensive background checks. We need to close the gun show loopholes, close the online loopholes, and end the defense from liability for gun sellers. First off, the gun show loophole is the stupidest thing in the world, because if you go to a gun show and you buy from anybody there that's a dealer or registered dealer, you still have to pass a background check. The only firearms you can buy are from private sellers, and they're usually like a Glock 19 or maybe a Mossberg shotgun. 90 to 95% of the people at gun shows are dealers, so do you still have to pass a background check to buy them? They use these stupid words like gun show loophole and online loophole. First off, you can't even buy a firearm online to have it shipped to your house. That stopped like in 1964, I think. So there's stupid ideas when they say stuff like this. They're trying to use big words to confuse the public into thinking that they need to stop this. Gun show loophole? They make it sound like every gun show you go to, you're like, hey, bud, what's behind the table? Oh, I got, you know, four RPGs and a surfaced air missile, a couple M60s. You know, you could have them all for a couple grand cash. Got a couple frags that I'll throw in for you. No, are you kidding me? Dude, ATF is all over those places all the time. They're super strict on what type of guns they can sell there. They don't let them say destructive devices or Class 3 weapons unless you're going through all the ATF paperwork, which takes months to do to even get weapons like that. And you can't even legally possess RPGs or surfaced air missiles or frag grenades, I might add, unless you build your own destructive device and pay your $200 tax stamp for each individual destructive device. And when they do that, when you pay your tax stamp, you turn in your forms to ATF, either on a Form 1 or a Form 4, you go through like 3-month background check with them. They look at everything. If you were even in a gun-related crime that was your fault, like open carry of a firearm in a state that doesn't allow open carry, they'll deny you that Class 3 weapon. ATF's super strict, so you can't even purchase weapons like that without going through proper paperwork. So, I mean, even mentioning stuff like that, and then the online loophole, everything has to be shipped to an FFL dealer. Anybody that does that is in violation of federal law and committed a felony. No dealer ships a gun right to your house. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard her say. And then she even goes on to say, you know, about the no-fly list. Well, I hate to tell her the San Bernardino shooters were not on the no-fly list. So that whole thing, the no-fly list is completely unconstitutional. In fact, it violates the First Amendment guarantee of due process by allowing the government to deprive people of their rights based only on suspicion. For the no-fly list has absolutely nothing on anybody, they say. It's only on you're suspected of being a suspected terrorist. Do you know how far out of line that can go if the government starts making no-fly list individuals not allowed to purchase or own firearms? That will be the first step. That will be it. Because as soon as they have that chance to implement something like that, it'll be fair game. That's all they're going to do. I mean, France had the strictest gun laws in French law is a countrywide gun-free zone. France is super strict with gun laws. Look what happened there. Again, there wasn't a single individual in any of those places carrying a compact or mid-sized handgun concealed. That's all it takes. A mid-sized 9mm, 45, anything. Something that you're accurate and proficient with. That's all it takes. You don't have to be carrying a $2,000 Kimber. I mean, don't get me wrong, these guns are nice. I like them, you know. But, I mean, Glock 19 is great. Glock 21, Glock 30. Glock 22 if you like 40 cal. Simple. You can go with an XDS, whatever you want. Even a mid-compact 380, something with 7 or 8 rounds. Enough to be able to take point and discharge your firearm in a safe, controlled manner and hit the opposition. That's all you need. You don't need to spend thousands of dollars on a weapon. You just need to be proficient with a reliable weapon. That's all it takes to stop incidences like this. And I love this guy. Liberty University President Jerry Falwell Jr., thinks the opposite is the case when it comes to gun restrictions, urging his school students to be armed, especially in light of this week's massacre in California. He states, I always thought that if more good people had concealed carry permits, that we could end these Muslims before they walk in and kill people. They said the word Muslim, so I guess everybody's going to get mad at him and be like, oh, you can't say the word Muslim. Anybody, terrorist, robber, gangbanger, whatever you want to say, they're coming in with a firearm, you better drop them before they shoot you. That's just simple fact. Hesitation gets you killed. Do not wait for them to shoot you. If you see them brandish a firearm, if you see them draw a firearm, if they look like they're doing it in a suspicious manner, now obviously, you know, if your buddy's walking over and he's like, hey, you know, what gun are you carrying? You show him, use some discretion. But you see a couple jihads running in and they're screaming Al-Kabar with AK-47s, you better engage them immediately before they even get a round off. That's why I always tell people to practice your draws and always keep a round in the chamber. I get so sick of talking to people. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm carrying this right now. And I'm like, okay, you know, let me look at it. They pull it out, drop the magazine out of it, and hand it to me. I'm like, okay, well, you hand it to me hot. That's fine. Go back on the pull the slide back, clear it. Nothing comes out. I said, your gun was empty. No, I had a full mag in it. I said, I don't care what you had in the magazine. I said, your chamber was empty. Oh, yeah, I don't carry it with one in the chamber. said, really? Do you understand what type of liability you're putting yourself in as far as safety issues if you need to draw your weapon? Well, I don't mean it scares me. Why does it scare you? Keep your finger off the trigger. Don't pull it until you're ready to engage the target. We did tests a couple weeks ago. We were doing just some close quarter concealed carry draw drills. From a stand ready, which is basically, you know, standing ready where you have your hands up, you know, above your chest, like you're going to either protect yourself or get into a fist fight. From when the buzzer went off to when we were able to draw our weapon from our concealed carry holster, discharge the weapon from a hip standpoint, which is not even coming up to a draw, right above the rib cage, and shooting one round center mass. The lowest we could get down to is about 1.7 seconds. Full draw discharge. That was with a loaded Glock 19. That's what I was running. 1.7 seconds. Now, obviously, they were a little higher at first. We got them down, but that was the best I could do. Then we said, okay, now we're going to do the exact same scenario, except the magazine's going to be full, no round in the chamber. So as soon as you go to draw your handgun from your concealed carry holster, you have to rack it. You have to put a round in the chamber. Then discharge your firearm. We could not get below 3 seconds. And half the time, we either had malfunctions or we were fumbling the gun trying to draw it. And that was under no extreme duress except for a shooting buzzer. That was it. 3 seconds, almost double the amount of time, almost a second and a half longer. And that was practicing. Some of the times we were up at 5 and 6 seconds when we first did it, fumbling around with the slide, doing stupid stuff. When you need your weapon, you need it now. You don't need to think about it. You need it right that second, and you need it to work and go bang every time you need it in a safe, controlled, accurate manner. That's it. So practice, practice, practice. That's all I have to say. That's why this Jerry Falwell Jr. says that's why he's encouraging those in the Crown, get a permit. Noting that Liberty, which has more than 14,000 students in Lynchburg, Virginia, offers free gun training courses. I love it. He said, I want us to be prepared. That's what it comes down to, guys. Everybody needs to get prepared. Nobody needs to be a sitting duck. Every time you're in a gun-free zone and you willingly disarm yourself, you're a sitting duck at the mercy of whoever wants to come in and commit harm to you, your family, or anybody around you. Hold on a second. I got drinks. Oh, yeah, by the way, the show's brought to you today by healthmasters.com. If you like what we say, support us. If you have questions, go on our website, check us out, healthmasters.com. Give us a call up if you got any questions about anything. We're here to help you guys out in anything you need. Also, too, as more Big Brother starts, the New York governor now announces that the app version of the state's See Something, Say Something program is now, they've introduced an app that will allow any New York resident to report anyone with their camera near a public building, bridge, tunnel, parked car, power line, whatever, on their iPhone or Android. See Something, Say Something allows anyone to capture suspicious activity as a photo or written note and send the information straight to the New York State Intelligence Center. Now, in theory, the idea is awesome. Okay, we have people that are being active, you know, they're looking around, they're making sure stuff happens right. But the problem is, majority of stuff gets abused excessively, and all it does is create a larger Big Brother surveillance state. I went into detail about how unconstitutional red light cameras were yesterday. And the same thing with this. They like to monitor more and more stuff. They're getting people on the bandwagon. They're not only allowing people to be monitored all the time on a regular basis, they're endorsing it that you need to make other people monitored. If you see somebody walking with a camera in New York and they're taking a photo of the Empire State Building, take a photo of them and send it to the State Intelligence Center. See Something, Say Something. What a crock. It's complete and total nonsense. If you see an idiot doing something and they look like they're about to go run into a store with a rifle and go commit jihad, you need to shoot them before they do so. Don't take a photo of them and send it to the intelligence center so they can send dispatch and get there 30 minutes before the shooting's over. Let's not do that. Let's just handle the situation like law-abiding American citizens that control what happens around us. Why do we have to be so reliant on Big Brother, big police, big government that we can't do anything now? We can't even wipe our nose without asking the government to help us with it. It's pathetic and it's egregious. And anybody that doesn't think so really needs to reevaluate your purpose here in the country. Because this is not the This is not how the government is supposed to work. They're not supposed to be here to change your diapers for you because you don't want to do so, because you're too lazy to do so. We're here to help people that are disabled, people that can't help themselves. That's what we're supposed to help support. The people that don't want to be aware, that don't want to be acute, that just want to sit on their butts all day and collect thousands of dollars a month for doing nothing because they can, that needs to stop immediately. And it's even a article. This one's interesting. Minnesota Muslims now are demanding pork-free halal food from Minnesota welfare food banks. Somalian refugees on lifetime welfare are demanding their free food adhere to Islamic law now. And it goes into detail about how absolutely ridiculous this is. Basically, Minneapolis has bent over backwards to help out all these refugees, primarily from Somalia. Now they start having such an increase in crime, the Somalians demanded a $48 million Sharia-compliant youth center to keep Somalian gangs out of trouble. And now we've even read for several years now, and I've talked about it before as far as how disrespectful and just the amount of bigotry that is shown towards other races from Muslims. That's what gets on my nerves about this whole, we need to support them and take care of them. We've seen many of times now, cab drivers in Minneapolis and airports have kicked out blind passengers with guide dogs because the dogs are unclean in Islam, or customers transporting alcohol, or drunk individuals getting in taxi cabs. These guys actually kicked them out of the car, will not drive them anywhere because they don't agree with them. They come here, they take advantage of American generosity, and then return it to us by enforcing their own brand of Sharia law. But as with most appeasement, these refugees keep making more demands. Now they want their food to be halal products, which, if anybody doesn't know what that means, it's meat slaughtered with Islamic prayers, and it basically bans all pork products. Now, you guys know our stance on pork. I don't agree with pork. I don't eat pork. But quite frankly, these guys came here for free stuff to have the American population take care of them. Now they demand not only that they don't get pork products in their free food banks, they want halal products, which are meat slaughtered with Islamic prayers. This is completely out of line. This is not about Muslims making do or getting help with food support. That has nothing to do with it now. Always understand this. Do some research. The Quran demands that Muslims make any country they live in adapt to them and their Sharia law. The last thing they plan on doing is assimilating here with us. That is the last thing they want to do. How long until they demand separate entrances to the food pantry for men and women, or about separate entrances to buildings now for Muslims who don't want to see Christmas or Christmas food or Christmas decoration? Where does the line stop? And I mentioned this not too long ago now. Refugees from whether it be Somalia, Middle East, any of them, Mexico, regardless, they are entitled to all of the following, not just and or, all of the following. Temporary assistance for needy families, Medicaid, food stamps, supplemental security income, Social Security disability insurance, administrative developmental disabilities, child care developmental program, independent living program, low-income housing, energy assistance, post-secondary education grants, refugee assistance program, Title IV foster care, Title 20 social services block grant fund. And from our lovely State Department, the ones that are supporting this, they get $2,200 a month totaled up per month for every man, woman, and child. Now, my question is, I work with a lot of customers here, law-abiding Americans that were born and raised here, have paid in Social Security, paid in taxes their whole life. I don't even know of any individual that I can think of off the top of my head, older individuals that are on Social Security, that get anywhere near $2,200 a month. Not even close. It's usually in the mid to low teens. So you're telling me these guys are almost getting double of what our American elderly people are getting from a broken Social Security structure because the government has fed off of it as their personal slush fund, but yet we still have enough money to give refugees $2,200 a month? No wonder everybody's coming here. No wonder half of Latin America is coming here. No matter half of the Middle East is coming up here and abusing the American taxpayers. They make more money than most people do that are working full-time for free, just for showing up. It's like you see those ads and commercials and stuff. They're like, come to our dealership and we'll give you a free T-shirt just for showing up. That's like what it is. Show up to America. If you can make it to our shores, just show up and we'll take care of the rest. We'll give you everything and anything you possibly need to survive. It's insane. And now, I mean, the health care is getting so strained now. The U.S. health care spending grew 5.3% last year, all the way up to $3 trillion. The country is now spending $9,523 per every person on health care in 2014. This is including Medicare, Medicaid, and private health insurance. That's far higher than what other developed countries pay, and health care spending now accounts for 17.5% of the U.S. economy. I don't know if anybody understands what that number means. I'll repeat that. Healthcare spending now accounts for 17.5% of the entire U.S. economy. Does anybody understand why this is happening? When you mandate healthcare like this and you force people to get healthcare, most people just say, I'll pay the fine, I'll pay the tax, or I'll go ahead and just get free Medicare because I don't have to pay for it. Now, like I just mentioned 2 minutes ago, we have hundreds of thousands of refugees pouring into the country. They get free everything, including free health care, free Medicare, free Medicaid, whatever you want to call it. All we're doing is spending more and more money every year. And I went into detail about Obamacare last night, and the fact one of the biggest issues that we run into with it is that it's not doing anything to help people become or stay healthier. You know, if they started offering, you know, instead of prescriptions, how they always like to, you know, subsidize that, if they subsidized non-GMO food or subsidized healthy supplements, you know, if they subsidized 50% of your supplements on your health care budget, you know how effective it would be and how much money it would save them? Because you would have to start going to the hospital and the doctor's office less and less, meaning you'd probably be on less and less medications. You wouldn't need your statin drugs and your blood pressure medications and all this other stuff because you could take care of it with natural supplements and a healthy diet. So they'd actually in turn make more money because the money you're spending every month in health care would actually be covering the cost instead of every single month having to go back to the doctor repeatedly and get more and more and more prescriptions. It's insane. And that's all people have to start doing is trying to live healthier, better, natural lifestyles, and the amount of health care usage would come down dramatically. And you know, I've discussed the HPV vaccine repeatedly over and over and over again. And it's funny now because we're doing that and all these other independent news guys and health guys all across the web are doing that. We're starting to see a giant backlash because of the HPV vaccine, of pro-HPV vaccine not wanting us to be able to state this. Here's an article from Reuters Health, published an article last week titled, Misleading HPV Vaccine Websites Are Easy to Find. That was the name of the article, where the author Lisa Rappaport exclaimed, parents who go online to find out about the vaccine for HPV, a sexually transmitted disease that causes cervical cancer, they have a hard time finding accurate information. And she goes on to say, in general, the web pages that were against rather than neutral or supportive of HPV were of lower quality and had less complete information. My question is, did anybody possibly think that maybe the reason why it's so easy to find information on negative reactions from the HPV vaccine is because there's so many negative reactions from the HPV vaccine? Is that really that difficult of a concept to understand? You usually don't get massive hits of a specific question or phrase on Google unless there's a ton of stuff for it to go on. When you type in HPV negative reactions, you get a plethora of stuff. Actually, I'm going to do it right now just because I want to see exactly what it does. I haven't really done that in a while. HPV vaccine side effects. HPV vaccine side effects. That's pretty specific. I click go, and I had 376,000 results. 376,000 results. If I click HPV vaccine deaths, I have 311,000 results. 311,000 results. Over 250,000 results pop up just with these specific phrases. there's probably a reason why I get that many hits when I type in that, because we're seeing thousands and thousands of little boys and girls all across the country coming down with severe side effects from this incredibly toxic compound that they're forcing all these children to be inoculated with without any long-term research. And I get the phone calls all the time, guys, repeatedly, all the time. Man, I gave my daughter the HPV vaccine a couple years ago. She's having all these health problems now. Her younger sister, we didn't let her get it. She's completely fine and healthy. Oh, I gave my daughter the HPV vaccine 10 years ago. Now she can't have children. She's sterile. What do we do? You know, I'm not even trying to sound mean or, you know, they're negative. I'm just giving you my honest truth, just the real deal. This is the truth, guys. This stuff is incredibly toxic. It causes severe side effects in a ton of people. Granted, some people don't have any negative side effects that they know of, but a whole host of them have a ton of side effects over and over and over again. It's the same things over and over and over again. Do your own research. I'm not telling you, if you want to do it, go ahead and do it. Everybody's got to be their own person. I don't want to be like the federal government and tell you we're mandating you can't have the HPV vaccine, because that makes me just as bad as the government trying to mandate the vaccine. Use your brain. Use research. Look up HPV vaccine side effects online and see the almost 400,000 hits that you get on there. Don't listen to these blithering idiots on Reuters Health stating misleading HPV vaccine websites are easy to find. No, duh, they're easy to find, because the whole website's riddled with them because there's so many negative side effects from the HPV vaccine. I mean, could the real concern about this whole article, could it actually be that the author of the study essentially inferred that as a form of veiled protection against disinformation, the public should have their searches limited on the Internet? And with draconian censorship being openly discussed now, isn't it more time now more than ever to keep our rights and our freedoms as far as with online privacy and online searchability? That's what everybody has to understand. When you hear about all these different laws and statutes they're trying to come out with to prevent, you know, online piracy, that's the one, you know, trademark infringement, it has nothing to do with that. They could care less if the music or movie industry loses money from online, you know, streaming, illegal streaming of videos. They care less about all that. They want to control. That is their ultimate goal, is control anything and everything you look at. They can't stand the fact that when I type in HPV vaccine death, I get over 300,000 hits. They don't want that to happen. They want me to type that in, and there's four or five hits. And they all link back to the CDC stating, we found very few deaths associated with this vaccine. That's what they want. They don't want anybody having free speech, free mind, free thought, free life. They don't want any of that. They want everything to be controlled. So you guys, be vigilant, be awake, be open. When all this stuff happens, when it starts colluding together like we're seeing it happening now, be aware of what's going on. When you hear King Obama say stuff like, everybody that's on the no-fly list needs to be barred from owning a weapon, but yet they give zero information out about what contributes to you being on a no-fly list, be very, very wary. What he said last night in his little speech, if you take it at face value and don't think about it and you just listen to it like a robot, it sounded like a great speech, like he wanted to protect America from Islamic ISIS, and he wanted to stop Islamic, you know, jihadists from being able to buy assault weapons. I just like using that word just because it's so funny to me. It sounded great. It sounded awesome. Like, okay, he's really making sense now. No. I already broke it down for you again. If you want to listen to it again, replay it here. Send it to your friends. If anybody really, really thought that that was a legitimate, true-hearted speech about keeping Americans safe, listen to it again. Listen to this show again. Listen to his speech again and analyze it. Use your cognitive rationality. Use it in detail. Look at everything down to the last descriptive words he uses. Just like he liked to say, we don't need weapons of war on the streets, like he stated before when he talked about banning guns, with the thing in Colorado and the thing again in California. They like to use these key words. It makes the guns sound scarier than they really are. I have news for you. A firearm will not shoot anybody unless you pull the trigger. It cannot do so. So making saying that an AR-15 assault weapon is more dangerous than a 45 caliber 1911 is ridiculous. Remember, they have to try. I mean, golly, guys, we can still go buy 150-round Arm Attack SAW drums for our AR-15. If you don't have one and you own an AR-15, I recommend you buy them. They're like $300, and they feed incredibly efficiently. 150-round Arm Attack SAW drum. Buy one if you want to have any type of serious firepower. AR-15s are an incredibly good, lightweight, accurate weapon. The bullet is a little light, and it does not have as much knockdown capacity as I would like. I really like 7.62x51 or 308 Winchester. However, that's a very heavy weapon. It's heavy ammunition to carry on your person. So understand all this stuff. Research this stuff, guys. If you have a concealed weapon permit, carry your weapon wherever you go. If you don't want to carry a big, blocky, full-size handgun, buy a small subcompact. Buy an ankle pistol. But bring something with you. Don't be a sitting duck when you go out to these places, when you go to the malls, any of these high-profile places. Heck, even after this, you understand, if you're going to a Christmas party, bring your pistol with you. We just had a little, you know, baby party, you know, for a bunch of our friends on Saturday to let everybody know, you know, we're having a boy, had some of our friends over, had some dinner. Three of my friends there were all carrying. I didn't tell them to carry. I didn't ask them to carry. I didn't even recommend that they carry. They just automatically carry. Because where we go, we always carry. Doesn't matter where it is. We always have a firearm on or about our person. That's how you guys have to start thinking. If people started thinking like that more in this country, we would have the crime rate would drop out tremendously. Because like I said before, no criminal, no robber, no terrorist wants to get in a firefight unless they really, really, really are highly trained individuals and they are itching for a firefight. But then usually at that point, they do something like go attack a police station. When's the last time you heard about Islamic terrorists going in and trying to shoot up a police station? I haven't heard one, not in a long time that I know of. Why? Because nobody wants to get in that type of confrontation with that many armed individuals. It's much easier to go to a party where everybody's unarmed, probably drinking, not aware of their surroundings, and just very complacent and happy. Everybody has to understand, be prepared for anything. We don't know what the government has planned. We don't know what these terrorists have planned. We don't know what anybody has planned. It's always open. Be prepared for anything. I'd rather have it with me and not need it than need it and not have it. Again, the show to you has been brought to you by HealthMasters.com. If you have any questions, if you need anything, give us a call up. Go to our website at HealthMasters.com. Check us out. If you guys need anything at all, let us know. We'll be more than happy to help you out. Ted should be back on the show tomorrow with us. He'll be getting in tonight. So we're praying that everything goes well with his flight. It should go perfect, though. You guys have a wonderful night. God bless.